From the beautiful campus of Texas A&M University, the Sidney and J.L. Huffines Institute for Sports Medicine and Human Performance in the Department of Health and Kinesiology brings you the Sports Medicine Podcast. Our mission is to make sense of and connect the science, practice, and application of the latest findings in sports medicine and human performance to the real world. Here's our host, the director of the Huffines Institute, Dr. Tim Lightfoot.
We want to welcome everyone to the Huffines Institute Sports Medicine Podcast today. We thank you for joining us and taking the time to download us and listen to us. We hope that wherever you're listening to us, you're having a good day today. We're having a great day because we have Mr. Frank Thomas with us in the studio today. And Frank is the division head of the Physical Education Activity Program, or PEAP as we know it, here at Texas A&M. Frank is quite famous in his own right, being the Olympic coach, archery coach for the U.S. national team at the Athens Olympics in 2004, national coach for many years otherwise. So we're going to talk to Frank today about a variety of different things. Welcome today to the podcast, Frank. We're glad to have you here.
Well, I'm glad to be here, and thanks for inviting me.
Sure. We're going to start off with activity. Yeah, you know, so many universities have activity programs, and why do we have activity programs at an institute of higher learning?
Well, you know, it goes hand in hand. If you look at how education is, it's not just education of the mind, but it's education of the mind, the body, and the soul. So it all comes into play to make the whole person.
So should students have a mandatory activity courses?
Absolutely. And obviously that solidifies my job, but certainly they should want it in addition to it being mandatory. It's one of those things that if you have the kids introduced to an activity, there's a chance that they might find something that they like to do. You know, our philosophy with the activity program is lifetime fitness, lifetime wellness, lifetime activity. Mm-hmm. And if we can get our foot in the door with these kids, you know, unfortunately, the physical education throughout the education system has been cut over the years. And what you see as a result of that is a epidemic of obesity. And, you know, we're on the front lines to fight against that. I mean, it what good does it do you to get a degree from Texas A&M if you die of a heart attack when you're 40 years old?
Right.
You know, we want these kids not only to be active, but to understand what's causing these problems and to be able to avoid them. And, you know, so that they have a quality of life that will be, you know, worth living down the line.
Right. It was always so interesting to me when I dealt with that, some of the activity program students, is that so many times because there wasn't health and physical education in junior high and high school now in many places, that by, when they got to these courses, this was the first time they'd ever been told about general health and activity and ways to be active across our lifetime. So you're looking at kids that are 18, 19, 20 years old, 21 years old, that haven't had any of this background information that we all consider kind of basic general knowledge.
That's true. And if they have had it, it's been at a very watered down level. Mm. And so what we're trying to do is bring it at a level that these kids are going to walk out the door understanding what they need to do to be successful in having a healthy lifestyle, you know, from everything from, you know, what they eat to what they drink to how much sleep they need to the mental aspects, you know, everything. And we want them to have a good baseline knowledge of that so when they get out in the real world, they can actually apply it.
Yeah. And don't they learn better when they're active?
Oh, certainly. I mean, you know, there's research that shows that if you are being active, that, you know, it stimulates, you know, oxygen in your brain and other areas of your brain that allow you to retain knowledge better. So it's a great thing to go hand in hand with a college education.
So if they want to make better grades, they should be actually taking activity courses.
They should be out. Yeah. If not, certainly, taking activity courses. But if not, at least getting a workout on their own.
Which is, yeah. Well, they were always fun when I took them. So.
Well, you know, and that's, you know, it's one of the keys. You know, what a great life. I get to come play every day. So it's it's a great thing. And that's what we want the kids. We want the kids, when they get into our activity classes, you know, not just to learn but to have fun. Because if you're having fun, then there's a chance you're going to go do that outside of the classroom. And what, that's our bottom line. I mean, you know, if you're hating it every day, what are the odds you're going to do it after class? So we're going to try and make it educational. There's going to be a cognitive portion to every one of our classes, but we're also going to try and make it fun so that you're having a good time. Tons of feedback every year from students that actually have fallen in love with the class that they've taken here and have gone on to, you know, not just do it, but do it well and for a lifetime.
And I think you have a key there, and that is you're igniting a passion in these students for an activity, whatever it may be. And I think over and over it's shown that people, as you just said, they're more likely to be active if they're doing something they enjoy doing. It doesn't seem like drudgery.
And that's what we hope. I mean, you know, our standard comment when we do our evaluations is, you know, this is my favorite hour of the week when they come when they come to our classes. I could see, you know, how you know, someone coming to an archery class or a ski class might appreciate that a little more than a chemistry class, but we want to make it a fun educational experience that is going to benefit the student beyond just the classroom.
Yeah, and I think folks should have an understanding of the number of students that you have in classes on a semester basis. That's, what, 12,000 students per semester?
A little over, usually a little over 12,000 per long semester. About 4,500 in our health and fitness classes, which is half lecture over current topics in health, half activity, and about 7,000+ in the just activity, straight activity classes.
So you have an amazing exposure, you and your instructors, to a wide range of students from across the university. What is a health topic that you find your students are not well acquainted with at all?
Well, you know, a lot of times there's a complete misunderstanding of nutrition. You know, and so we'll go into detail about, you know, what causes what activities in terms of, you know, if you're eating, you know, too many carbs, if you're eating too much protein, you know, how do you get the right combination? What is the right combination for you? I mean, what, mm-hmm. you know, so, but there's so many topics like that where you can get, you know, one of the things that, you know, by seeing 12,000 students, the activity program actually becomes the face of the university to some degree. Mm-hmm. You know, when you think of a freshman coming to Texas A&M, there's a good chance that their English class is going to be fairly large, their chemistry class can be fairly large, in the hundreds, so to speak. Mm-hmm. You know, and when they come to an activity class, they're going to be between 24 and 40 kids. You know, there's a good chance that activity teacher is going to be the only teacher that student will actually talk to one-on-one during the semester, unless, you know, they have the nerve to get up and talk to that, you know, in front of that 300 or 400 person class. So it's not just that we teach activities, but we touch every single student that comes here. And we want to do that in a positive way, and we're going to represent the Department of Health and Kinesiology, you know, as the face of the department and, of, you know, the face of the university, for that matter.
And, you know, we're talking about Texas A&M, but really these things that you were saying are broad-based across most universities in the country.
Well, I mean, some universities have the required classes. You know, I think the pendulum kind of swings back and forth from time to time. You know, at some times, you know, it swings to where they start getting rid of the required classes. But I think it's swung a little bit back right now, particularly with the health and fitness class, where you're focusing on the health aspects. There seems to be a few more of those being required across the country now. Now, you know, we're one of the few major universities, you know, where you talk, you know, 40,000 plus students that still require it, because, you know, when you start looking at facilities and just teachers for that, it's a tremendous amount of facilities, tremendous number of teachers. And we've been very blessed to be supported by the university at this point.
Yeah. I mean, when you're looking at 12,000 students, you're looking at over 25% of the population every year this year at the university. So you're right, huge number of instructors needed for
and
that.
That's per semester, so it's actually more for the year. You're at 50% for the year.
Yeah, and I've been at places that didn't have required activity courses, and yet every course we offered was full. So and more. So there's obviously a need, there's obviously a desire for that, and I think we just continue to remind people that it is good for folks to be active and to help them find activity for their lifetime.
Yeah, I think, and we can get the best of both worlds there, because not only do we have it required for the students, but the students can take it beyond the two that are required, and there are a tremendous number of students that do that. They find that having that class every semester allows them to, you know, blow off the steam, blow off the stress, you know, stay fit, mm-hmm. you know, we're very fortunate. We've got fantastic facilities. We're involved with rec sports. A lot of times you'll see an adversarial type situation between rec sports and an activity program, but we're just the opposite here. We work well together. They do a great, rec sports does a great job. We get to work with them. They work with us. And, you know, it's just a great benefit for the students.
Yeah. Now, what people like to do sports-wise or activity-wise changes over the years, but what are the most popular courses, activity courses that you offer?
Well, you know, right now I would say that, you know, particularly from the female side, yoga and Pilates are just, we can't open enough classes. Mm. You know, everything we open fills up within the first day, mm-hmm. Without a doubt. But you know, we have 75 different activities that we offer. You know, now some of those will be, you know, beginning, intermediate, and advanced levels, mm-hmm. like with tennis and you know, racquetball and things like that. But, you know, there's something out there for everybody, from, you know, canoeing, whitewater rafting, whitewater canoeing. I mean, canoeing takes a trip to North Carolina every year, mm. you know, where they canoe a river over there. You know, we have a ropes challenge course. We have Mount Aggie, where we actually teach snow skiing.
Now, for those of you listening, remember, we're in South Central Texas, and we do teach snow skiing.
And it does, you know, it does get under freezing at least once a year here. But it's, you know, it's a popular class. And, you know, we have the standard strength training, running, walking, tennis, basketball. I mean, it's just tons of class. We want to offer, you know, those kids a chance to find their niche. And we've actually had, you know, kids come up and request a class. And if any way possible, we try and find something that was for everybody.
Mm-hmm. Cool. So let's switch gears here a bit. Let's talk about your Olympic experience. So you've been quite heavily involved at the national level in mm-hmm. archery. Are you a good archer yourself?
I was a above average archer. I was not a great archer. I actually did not start archery till I came to Texas A&M, and you know, quite by accident. I played tennis in college, and so I came here as a graduate assistant and thought I would teach tennis, and ended up having to fill out a little form saying what I could teach, and I put tennis and badminton and golf, and I kind of ran out of things, and I had archery for 2 weeks in college, so I put archery in. Mr. Mamaliga, who was the chair of the program at that time, sent me to talk to the head of the archery, a man named Bavisette, and he could have been speaking Greek. I had no idea what he was talking about, but he said assist for a semester and I would be fine. And so I went back and told Mr. Mamaliga, who wanted me to teach archery, that if I assisted for a semester, I would be fine. And he put me assisting at 12 and teaching at 1. So whatever was said at 12 o'clock, the same thing was said at 1 o'clock. But, you know, it just went from there. I picked it up in a year or so. And as it turned out, it's the reason I have a job here. Mr. Bavisette left right as I was finishing my master's at the end of the year, and they needed an archery teacher, and voila, I was the archery teacher. And then was just blessed. I was taken under the wing of some of the best coaches. A lady at the University of Texas named Kathy Tate.
Normally we don't recognize the University of Texas as having any value at all whatsoever to Aggie land. But so in this case, though, there was value there.
Yeah, she was a great lady. She showed me kind of the ropes and you know, how to work with equipment and the process of you know, technique involved. And then from that, I actually in 1982, went to what was then the sports festival, which is like a mini Olympic in the U.S., and met some people that were heavily involved in archery on the higher level, and a young lady named Sherry Rhodes and a gentleman named Lloyd Brown, who turned out to be Olympic coaches before me, and they once again took me under their wing and showed me the ropes and started getting me involved in international coaching. And 1997, I was an assistant coach at the World Championships, and then kind of from there, it just went crazy. We were doing, you know, 3 to 5 international tournaments a year at that point, and just kind of worked my way up and was fortunate enough to get excellent reviews every time I went out. Ended up the 2004 Olympic coach. And just, you know, the we had two Aggie archers on that team that helped tremendously. One of them was on the men's team that I coached. And actually, one of them was about to be, we were recruiting or was about to be an Aggie. And so it was just a great experience. I mean, going to Athens, which is the home of the modern Olympics, and we were actually one of the sports that were allowed to shoot in the old Olympic Stadium.
That's what I was going to ask you. I thought you, I remembered you telling me that.
It was, I mean, from the standpoint, historical standpoint, amazing. We were walking down these tunnels that they used to light with torches. You know, you could still see the burn marks on the ceilings. And you know, when you walk out, it's a horseshoe stadium, and you're looking out the end of the horseshoe at the Acropolis and you know, the Parthenon, and just, you know, amazing, amazing. Now, from an archery standpoint, it was a horrible place to shoot. I mean, the wind was just howling, and in a horseshoe stadium, that means it's coming at you from every direction, and, you know, trying to figure out where to aim was interesting in time, but we did okay. You know, we did not medal, unfortunately. We finished, one of my individuals finished sixth, which was very good, and the men's team finished fourth, losing out on in the semifinals by 1 point, but I'm sure I'll let that go someday. And then we lost the bronze medal match by two. So, but it was a just great people, great experience, and you know, just being able to be around the best athletes in the world, just amazing, amazing. And walking out for the opening ceremonies, you can't imagine it if you hadn't got to do it. It's just an incredible thrill.
Cool. So many of us probably don't know anything about competitive archery that are listening. So can you give us a synopsis? They shoot like from 10 yards out or 50 yards out, or what do they do?
A little past 10. We actually shoot at 70 meters, 77 yards. And what we'll do is the first days are what's called a ranking tournament. They actually limit it to, the Olympics are limited to 64 men, 64 women. You shoot 144 arrows, and they take your score, and then they seed you from 1 to 64.
So this is three quarters of a football field.
Yes.
They're shooting, and then 144 arrows, and they're shooting at a target that's...
You're trying to hit a spot about the size of your fist.
From 77 yards out.
With all kinds of wind blowing. Occasionally there's a calm day, but not very often. Now once you rank from 1 to 64, it becomes just like that NCAA tournament.
It's a knockout tournament, huh?
Number 1 shoots against number 64, and you only shoot 12 arrows. Anybody can get hot for 12 arrows. So it's really, at that point, the pressure just goes through the roof, and every shot has to be perfect. And number 1, like I said, shoots against 64. The winner goes on, the loser goes home, and you just work your way out until you eventually have a champion. Yeah, I mean, it's really exciting to watch in terms of once the eliminations start.
Right. Now, are there different bows that are used? Do they have classes for compound and reflex? At the
Olympic level, it's only recurve archery.
Not reflex.
And now the World Championships have compound and recurve. But for the Olympics, it's just recurve.
I read someplace that one of our archers at one time didn't have a lot of room, so he would practice shooting through his garage, open the door in the front and the door in the back, and shoot through the garage at a target in the backyard.
Yeah, that's actually a guy named Justin Hewish. He needed a little bit more distance, but you know, archery is such a great sport because you can do it forever. We currently have a gentleman shooting. His name's Butch Johnson. He was one of my shooters in 2004, but he's been to 5 Olympics.
Wow.
He's 55 years old. He's got a chance to make, you know, this next Olympics, and he's up in Connecticut, and he has his snow blower that blows the snow between him and his target, and he in his basement shooting out a window because it's too cold to go outside and shoot. Then he has to blow the snow off to get to his target and get his arrows and get back in.
I was going to say, well, he's that good, and you know all the arrows are in the target, not scattered elsewhere.
Yeah, he doesn't have to dig through the snow.
Yeah, for me, they'd be scattered everywhere. So we're running a little bit short on time. Do you have any take-home messages that you'd like to share with folks?
Well, you know, we just hope that everybody can find some kind of activity that they can they can do and enjoy, you know, and get out with other people if you need to, or just get out and exercise with yourself. I mean, that's if you look at a lot of the health issues that we face today, mm-hmm. it's due to inactivity. And, you know, it just takes getting up off that couch and doing something. And if you'll do that, you know, you're going to increase your quality of life, and that's what we want you to do. We want you to have the best life possible, and you can't do that sitting on your couch.
And we just want them to do something they like.
Yep.
Right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Find something you like to do. Well, thank you, Frank, for being here today.
I appreciate you asking me.
And, you know, don't turn off everything yet, because Justin here has our question of the week.
That's right. So what is a common health topic that students are not well informed on when they come to college?
Thank you, Justin. So be the first one to email us the answer to the email address that's on the website, and you'll win one of those nifty free Huffines podcast t-shirts. Be the first in your neighborhood to have one. Hurry, email right now. Somebody right now is probably emailing right now as we're finishing up here. Thank you all for listening and joining us today. We just ask and we hope that you remain healthy and active.
Thanks for listening to the Huffines Institute Weekly Sports Medicine Podcast. This podcast was produced by Justin Dobson and made possible by generous support from the Omar Smith family and the Sydney and J.L. Huffines family. This podcast is published under a Creative Commons 3.0 license. That means you can't sell it or change it, but feel free to give it to everyone you know and to talk and blog about us. And in case you were wondering, our openings and closing are provided by johnmilesproductions.com, providing voiceovers internationally. Music was provided by Dave Zeltner. Find him on the web at davidzeltner.com. And just so you know, we love hearing from you. If you have questions or comments, please send them to huffinespodcast@hlkn.tamu.edu. From all of us at the Huffines Institute, we hope you have an active and healthy week.